It's Mercy Sunday. For one reason or another, we seem to have collected a picture, every single type of mercy picture, but you can't get too many of those things. You know, we won't get into heaven without God's mercy. None of us are worthy. We can't earn it or work for it except to have faith and open the door to Christ, which is essentially the essence of this reading. This picture over here is the actual, and the same image is in the reconciliation room, and they are the, I believe, the original image that was commissioned by St. Faustina, and it's in Vilnius, Poland, and then at the convent in Krakow, there's another one, and then another one is the statue out here, and then there's one in the hall that's another version, and then this version is perfect for this Sunday because it illustrates this reading perfectly. And it's got the door that Christ is emerging through. And in the second reading, the blood and the water, the two rays radiating from Christ's heart, which is baptism and Eucharist, and then the forgiveness of sins, reconciliation. He breathes on them, and that's the power of, well, confirmation and the power of the Holy Spirit that makes it possible for us to see Christ, though he cannot be seen with our eyes. I happen to run into something. I think it was Apple News or something, one of those kind of things, one of those news collating things. I was looking at it last night, and it made this rather disturbing remark. It was Business Week, not a crackpot news source, that said by 2030, 44 people will control three-quarters of the world's wealth. And I read that, and first I was dismayed. And you know what I thought? They can't take it with them. And God will say to them, and what good is this piled up wealth of yours for? It's a very grave danger to have that much of anything. How great is the responsibility? What is true wealth? Showing mercy. Bumpy's funeral, of our staff member that we on the staff loved and many of you did, she picked out for her gospel the Last Judgment. I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was at the auction, you baked me a cake. We have three more of those. It's not an exhaustive list, isn't it? I was coming into church, you held the door for me. I was a stranger and you said, peace be with you, like Jesus did at the rite of peace. Showing God's mercy is so easy, and that's true wealth, and it comes with us forever, and it's so easy to do, and so many people in this world don't have a clue what matters, you know? I said, thank God for death if some of these dictators would still be alive from 2,000 years ago. But God puts an end to it, doesn't he? We all know the score. But what is the meaning of life? We're all seeking this. This story, I believe I mentioned it once before. On 9/11, those of us who are old enough were all watching the TV that day. I had a friend from Los Angeles called me and woke me up in Tillamook. And by the way, as a new priest, I didn't understand this. If it happens again, something like that, I will. Is that by that evening, everybody wanted a service in church, and I wasn't ready for that. On Sunday, we had a full crowd. That's a pretty big church for that time of year. By the next weekend, they were gone. But see how God got through to all of us on some level. Well, my father was watching it in L.A. I was in Tillamook. He was still alive at that time. And I love my father very much. He was not known for his charitable giving. He was a little bit tight with the money. That goes for gifts as well. But anyway, we loved him anyway. But, you know, he was watching this, and the number of the firefighters at one of the towers that collapsed, and I don't mean to be depressing, but they showed a number of the firefighters that had died, which brought tears to my eyes at the 5:30 Mass, because when you go to the 9/11 memorial, there's a big memorial to these guys, and the actual fire truck, one of them that's battered, is there. But anyway, he saw that, and like all of us, he was moved to tears, and he was moved, this is like the second coming of Christ, to write a big check to the firefighters fund. I couldn't believe it. Dad, I hope you're not listening to this story. Dad, I hope. And anyway, so he wrote this check. And then almost immediately, A number flashed on the screen, the number of the dead so far that they knew of. And it was the exact number as the check number that he had just written. So my father, who was an agnostic, not an atheist, but he believed that we can't know who God is, and I don't want to know because I don't want to know why is he permitting evil. It was that kind of thing. And he had some lifestyle things that didn't go with belief in God. So, you know, it was that kind of thing. But I rebelled against that by becoming a priest. But I'll tell you, I miss going over to his house because there was like five pictures of me in a collar all over the house. Nobody could believe that I was a result of his, you know, lifestyle. But on some level, I think he really, you know, he was really in tune with what I was doing and all that stuff. But anyway, he calls me and he tells me this story. And he said he wrote out this big check. And I said, "My God, it's a miracle." He said, "No, that's not what I'm calling to tell you." That was enough of a miracle right there. He says, "The number of the check was the same as the number on the screen." My father, who never once asked me a religious question in my life, he says, "What do you think it means?" You all know what it means. I said, "Your act of kindness was seen by the Almighty, and he immediately let you know how much he appreciated it." And he knew darn well what that meant. Now, it was funny because that's how God speaks to me most often, is coincidences, so-called, like that. My father had the same gift, apparently. But see how the Lord knocked on the door and he opened it at that moment. But it started with his, I'd say that was probably one of the best investments he ever made. It came with him past this world. It was an investment in the future. It was a unselfish act of love that was not going to be repaid in this world. So God immediately repaid him with a knock on the door, and he opened it. And I've always been very moved by that, because all of us, whenever we've done a little act of kindness, God has not been slow to notice. Notice how Thomas, the first time, you know, they're all Thomas, none of them stayed with Jesus. They were all doubters. Thomas got a bad rap. He just happened to not be there. And Jesus is not there, but he's sure listening. Thomas says, "I'm not going to believe unless I put my hands here." What a lot of nerve. "And my hands here." So Jesus, who was listening, though he wasn't there, he comes right in and immediately zeroes in on Thomas. We've all been the object of merciless actions, haven't we? People's mouths or actions, and probably we ourselves have done merciless or said merciless things. We may not even realize we're doing it. And this is, we have a lifetime to hopefully move toward mercy in a merceless world. It was about a year ago, I went up to Mount Angel. I usually go there about once every month or 6 weeks for spiritual direction or some other thing. I parked there by the guest house on that lower level. The parking spots are pretty slim right now. They're doing a construction project. And I'm not the best parker, you know, sometimes. I park too close to the car next to me, and the guy couldn't get his door open. And he could have slid through the passenger side, you know. I was wrong, okay? He was waiting for me when I came out. He waited a long time. And he let me have it with both barrels. Visiting a monastery and a seminary. What language? Imagine casting aspersions on my driving abilities. Well, you know, some sort of comment would have certainly been appropriate, but what he said has stuck with me all year. It was far out of proportion to the sin committed. He got it. You know, he enjoyed being unloading on me. And frankly, I had several years of that in the luggage department. So on some level, I understood this. But this was a personal attack. You know, I'm sharp on the rejoinder, but I can never think of what to say until after he drove off, I thought of 20 things to say back. Like, I may not be able to park, but at least I'm not a, I won't say that either. But, you know, that's an example of a merciless action. When I'm legitimately aggrieved, must I return in kind? That's mercilessness. We're put on earth precisely to deal with those kind of situations when somebody's hurt me. Am I going to just push back like a pagan and give them exactly what they deserve? Is that what I want from God? He's not going to do that to me. If I ask forgiveness, he's going to forgive me. And I'm going to have tests of my own mercy. On Thursday, we buried one of our prisoners down in City View. Seldom has there been so much traffic on Commercial at 1:30 in the afternoon. Freeway must have been plugged because it was just loaded. Like three or four lights would go by before you could get through. But I noticed on the way back, where I didn't have any set time to get back, so it was okay. But people in front of me, and you get right around Bentley there when you're making a left on Trade Street or Ferry, whichever one that is. That's Ferry Street. And you're making a left there. And people are trying to get out of the driveway, and some will very graciously hold back and let them in, even though it's our fourth light. Everybody wants to get through the light, but they'll hold back and let somebody in. Others will rush ahead to make sure nobody's going to get in front of me. I see a few of you are like that out there. I was praying about this reading, and I thought, mercy, merciless, selfless, selfish. Don't we face those choices constantly? Holding a door for somebody when I don't feel very good, I'm in a hurry. Occasionally somebody lets me go forward if I have one or two items at the store, or maybe I might turn around and offer that. Doesn't happen much anymore. We're mostly merciless with our mouths. Let's face it, that's our biggest weapon. We can also show mercy with that by refraining from saying something when it is deserved. That's when mercy really gets pulled out. And that here in this gospel, Jesus gives the church this greatest sacrament of mercy, reconciliation. He didn't just say this to the 12 apostles, or else this is, why would they put this in there if they all died 2,000 years ago? It was given to the church for serious sins so that we could send people forth knowing they were forgiven through the church, the priests laying out of hands. It's Christ that speaks, not me. We even use the same gesture as in the mercy picture of holding the heart, putting our hand out. That's Jesus. When we have a serious sin so many times, you can't go back in time and undo it. It's gone. The person's gone. We can't forget. God doesn't ask us to forget, not to excuse, not to even like the person. We may not like ourselves, but God will come and stand in the past because to him it's still present. And from then on, when we may remember this terrible thing we've confessed, he says, peace be with you. I'm not going to bring it up any more than I did in this gospel. I won't bring it up again. We can't forget, but he can. And so you got this. This is the supreme moment of mercy with these people, none of whom stayed with Jesus. John came back. Everybody split when Jesus needed him. He comes right back through that door and gives them a mission. And we have a mission too, which is to be Christ's light in a world that doesn't know him, a selfish world where the object is to become one of those 40 people with all the loot. Is that life? What does that bring you in the end? It won't help on the last judgment, that's for sure. I might like to try it for a couple of days, right? But it won't get us there. This is true wealth. And another thing we notice in this gospel is that Jesus comes right through the door. But he's wanted on the other side. Otherwise, Jesus is polite and knocks. Those who are perhaps far away from Christ, my father was, he will periodically come by and knock on the door and see if we'll open it. But he waits for that first movement on our part. He won't come through the wall that we have erected between him and us unless we ourselves, on some level, wish God or realize we need God. And so you have that image of Christ, you know, waiting by the door, and he'll walk through if he's welcome. Nothing can keep him back. No problem is too great for God. No sin too big to forgive. And no person so humble that they have not received a mission from God. And some of our missions are very great indeed. It's one person after the other. Just like this man that unloaded on me that day and I deserved it. That's one person after the other. I got what I deserved, didn't I? But hopefully he won't when he sees that again. It's a microcosm. We've all done those sort of things. But God will challenge us That's how we grow. Without these situations, we wouldn't grow. We'd have the illusion that we're merciful when, in fact, we've never been tested. So our Lord then invites us into the great mystery of life, in which we are privileged to know something about what is really important in life and what our mission is and what it isn't. And we thank God for the apostles that passed the faith on to us, and Christ, who very patiently waits for our faith, even as Thomas was led to the faith, so are we.